Hello, everyone. This is Mike Fitch with Mike Fitch's Life Coaching in conjunction and association with Project Phoenix Life Coaching. You can find my life coaching information at projectphoenixcoaching.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram if you are so inclined. It's been a while since I've recorded a podcast, but I received some inspiration from a very good friend of mine, and I don't ever want to force the podcast and just do them for the sake of doing them. I want to make sure that it's purposeful and that I have the right motivation to do it, that I'm not just trying to fill airtime. So recently, a good friend of mine in the life coaching world turned me on to a document about the conflicting agendas of ego versus soul. This really good friend of mine is a life coach as well, as I mentioned. You can find her at lightingthepath.com if that is something that you are interested in. Not that I wouldn't be more than happy to provide the services, but if you're more interested in the female perspective on things, she is vastly more experienced than I am and a tremendous resource. So I will put a plug in for her and would really like to thank her for the resources that she's provided for me. I have been hosting a men's group, a virtual men's group, online men's group for, I don't know, maybe a month or so. And our topic yesterday was this very topic. We dove into ego versus soul and how it applies both professionally and personally. And there's a very stark contrast between the ego and if we are operating from our soul. And you can look at that different ways, because maybe saying operating from the soul turns you off, but it can be heart-centered, right? Coming from a place of love or care or compassion. Those words all, I think, can be equated with operating from your soul or your heart, whereas the ego is typically run by fear. And ego requires a tremendous amount of compensation because we don't think we're enough when the ego kicks in. It is a reaction to feeling threatened. It's an imaginary threat, typically. And ego learned its job in childhood. So as we grow and mature, we experience negative things, rejection, abandonment, abuse, humiliation, embarrassment, whatever it is. And every time one of those incidents occurs, we throw up a piece of armor. We throw up a wall. We throw up a barrier. We throw up something psychologically that says, well, that sucked. I don't want to experience that again. So let's make sure we construct something here to keep me from having to feel that again. So the ego is really trying to do a job. It's trying to keep you safe. Problem is, the ego has to be kept in check. Its role needs to be really, really small. And instead, it tends to get inflated and it tends to extend beyond its purpose or beyond its usefulness, I guess I should say. The ego is built around traumas. It responds to your triggers, your soft spots. It's very focused on your flaws and trying to hide and disguise those flaws. And that's where the compensation comes in. And everybody's seen people that, you know, compensate. They're going to compensate with things that they wear, with things that they buy, with the way they are perceived. That's the ego trying to make up for all of these perceived flaws that they think you have, that we don't have. You know, everybody, nobody's perfect, but as far as flaws, we're all exactly how we're supposed to be. But the ego lies to us in an attempt to keep us safe. It urges us to hide and play really, really small. Because if you play small, then there is much, much less risk of experiencing those traumas again. I'm not going to experience rejection. I'm not going to experience abandonment because I'm not going to put myself in a position to experience those things again. But every time we make those decisions, we limit our experience. And really, that's kind of what life is about, right? Is experiences. Be they good, be they bad, it's all forming the story that is you and is your life. So it urges us to hide. Ego is extremely defensive. It takes things very personally. It's very impatient because the focus of the ego is entirely on us. So it's a very selfish perspective. The ego is not concerned about anybody else. The ego is just very concerned about keeping us safe. Another thing that the ego regularly does is that it compares us to everybody else, right? And we all know that comparing ourselves to other people is only going to yield negative results. And again, therein lies the need to compensate because of the comparisons, which is rooted in insecurity and fear. So there are just so many unfortunate characteristics associated with the ego. The ego is also diligently focused on looking backwards, because it has to look back at the things that caused us pain, that caused us sadness, that caused us hurt, that caused us trauma. And then it tries to eliminate as many variables as possible and make our life very predictable. It craves the comfort of the familiar. And I know that in past podcasts, I've referred to the pendulum swing. And the ego is really going to prefer a very, very, very small pendulum swing, because that you live small that way, but it's very safe. It's very predictable. There's less risk. There's less reward. But there's also less potential for us, we think, to be hurt, because it gives us the illusion of control, when in fact, all we're doing is feeding into our traumas and our triggers. So that pendulum stays really small. Well, yeah, that might limit some negative experiences, but it's also going to eliminate pretty much every amazing experience that could potentially happen by throwing yourself out there. It's going to be hard to get beyond mediocrity with the ego running the show, because there will not be any healthy risks taken. Because again, its job is to keep you safe. It's an overprotective parent of sorts. And it made me think of a song by Pink Floyd called Mother. If you have not listened to it, listen to it. It's a quality tune. But in the song, the lyrics go, "Mother, do you think they'll like the song? Mother, do you think they'll try and break my balls? Mother, should I build a wall?" And it's that idea that in an attempt and in an effort to protect ourselves, we're going to throw up shields. We're going to throw up armor. We're going to throw up a wall. Mother, will they put me in the firing line? And then mother replies with, hush now, baby, don't you cry. Mama's going to make all your nightmares come true. Mama's going to put all of her fears into you. Mama's going to keep you right here under her wing. Mama's going to keep baby cozy and warm. Mom will help you build a wall. So in this song, I inserted the word ego for mother. Your ego is going to do all those things to keep you safe, both personally and professionally. Mama won't let anything dirty get through. And at the end of the song, the last line says, mother, did it need to be so high? To a point where you've walled yourself off from every potential experience, be they good or bad. And that's not really a way to live. Living from a place of fear. Living small. Ego tends to speak first and it tends to speak loudest, right? It's going to get really boisterous out of fear and it's going to jump up and it's going to yell and it's going to scream, thinking that that is a defense mechanism. It's also going to try and occupy ourselves with busyness and addictions. So we don't want to feel, we don't want to think about the things and why we get triggered this way. So if I make myself really busy, I can insulate myself. If I turn towards alcohol, if I turn towards drugs, if I turn to, and not that working can't be an addiction. Workaholics can, I mean, that's as much of an addiction as drugs and alcohol. But we're going to find as many distractions to occupy ourselves so that we don't have to think about all of these potential painful things that have happened to us and then, of course, could happen again. So we keep ourselves super busy. We occupy ourselves with our addictions in order to avoid dealing with our shit. The ego doesn't want to deal with our shit. The ego wants to hide from our shit. So the soul or the heart, on the flip side, operates from a position of love, right? Acceptance, love, understanding that your soul, your heart are your source of really true power. Because we want to get back to that true self before we started throwing up all that armor, before we started throwing up those walls to protect ourselves. We want to chip away at those barriers that we've built for ourselves in an attempt to protect. I get it. The ego's doing its job. It's damn good at its job. A+. But the soul's job is to make you soar. It's very self-accepting. It's very calm. It's very grounded. It comes with a tremendous amount of courage. It's authentic. And also requires you to operate from a point of vulnerability. And that word tends to scare us all to death. And instead of occupying ourselves with busyness and addictions, our heart and our soul want us to turn into that fear, to walk into that fear and be very, very curious about it. And this is something over the last 4 or 5 years that I have gotten much better at. I used to occupy myself with busyness every time I would get triggered, right? I didn't even know what that was at the time. And now when I get triggered and I get that feeling in my stomach, or I get that feeling in my chest, or I get that feeling in my shoulders, it pops up in different parts of my body. Now I see that as an opportunity. It's not like I'm joyful about it, but I see it as an opportunity to be very, very curious about what it is that sparked that physical reaction. What was it that made me want to turn and hide? What was it that generated that fear And then I can walk back through my experiences and see if I can't find the root of that trauma that in turn yields that trigger that creates that feeling in my body. I had, during the men's group, I kind of had an epiphany. I used to, ever since my divorce, I've told people that one of the things that struck me about my marriage is I felt like I was walking on eggshells all the time, in that my ex-wife was pretty demanding, very driven, not bad things. She's an amazing person, but I never felt like I was enough. So my ex-wife did not make me walk on eggshells. I made myself walk on eggshells because I was compensating, right? It was my ego lying to me, telling me that I am not enough, that made me walk on eggshells. My ego told me, don't you dare express your needs. Don't you dare have any wants. You're just lucky to be in this situation. You've been rejected before. You've been abandoned before. And if you want that to happen again, then yeah, you go ahead and throw yourself out there. You give her a reason to reject you. You give her a reason to leave. So I wouldn't, right? Played really small. But because I never dealt with my shit, because I never addressed those feelings that would come up that would make me feel like I was walking on eggshells, or that I needed to walk on eggshells, that I didn't have the right to express needs or wants, or even argue at times if I disagreed with a decision. That all got suppressed and all got repressed. And because I never dealt with it, it manifested itself in a very ugly way that ended up ending my marriage anyway. So the very thing I was trying to avoid became a self-fulfilling prophecy because I refused to deal with my shit. Because I was operating from a point of fear. I was operating from a point of insecurity. I was operating from a point of a lack of self-worth. And you can't do that. As hard as it is to actually put into action, right? It's easy to just sit here and say it. Everybody has needs. Everybody has wants. Everybody has self-worth. But if you don't believe that, then you're going to let the ego run things. Another thing that the ego wants to do is it wants to take everything personally. And there's a book called The Four Agreements. And one of the major agreements is don't take things personally. And so whether you're dealing with things at work, maybe you're a leader, maybe you're in charge of something, and this came up in the men's group, and you throw out an idea, and people counter that with their own ideas. Ego wants to say, hey, I'm in charge, I'm the boss, this is what we're doing, and not even necessarily give consideration to the opposing viewpoints because you see it as a threat to your legitimacy, right? You see it as a reflection on your lack of worth, when really, it's just their opinion. And if you don't take that personally and you're able to step back from that, even take a pause and say, you know what, I need to think about this for a little bit. So I make sure that, and you don't say this necessarily out loud, but that I make sure that I'm operating with an open mind and not from ego. Because ego is going to make you close off, and it's going to make you take those counter opinions personally as an affront. And the same thing in interpersonal, you know, even with your partner. Don't take things personally. Allow them to express their opinions. Allow them to express themselves and have open communication. And the thing that kills communication the most is when we take things personally and we start to shut down and we start to get really, really defensive. Ego gets really defensive and really impatient, whereas the soul is really open and peaceful and accepting. Okay. So that ability to not take things personally. And somebody wrote a book once. Well, I don't know if it was a book. Somebody somewhere I know, somebody said that if you're in a partnership, you shouldn't go to bed angry. And although I think that's probably a good goal, maybe a nice objective, I don't think it's something that needs to be 100% fulfilled, because you might need time to think. You might say, you know what, I don't have the capacity right now to deal with this in an open and accepting and compassionate way. So I need to process for this. I need to process this for a little bit. And asking for that pause, that's kind of a boundary. And I was always terrible at that, asking for that pause. I always felt like I had to give an immediate response. I need to give an immediate response. They need feedback right now. And I think at times that can cause you to potentially give in when you didn't really think that was the best thing. It could potentially allow somebody to concede where they didn't necessarily want to concede, all in an attempt to say, oh, we didn't go to bed angry. I might not go to bed angry, but I repressed some really strong opinions, and they're going to manifest themselves in other ways later on out of some type of resentment because I didn't express myself when I should have. So I think it's a good goal to potentially not to go to bed angry, but if it's going to require you to stay up till 4 a.m. talking something out and eventually somebody conceding when they didn't necessarily really want to concede, I don't think that that's necessarily healthy. Taking that pause and allowing that conversation to happen when both parties are in an accepting and understanding mindset and are not taking things personally, I think that's a huge piece of communication that can be very, very beneficial both professionally and personally. And the soul and heart, they want a big pendulum swing because they want experiences. They want to help you live your best life and figure out who you really are and live authentically and genuinely. And that takes risk. It just does. And the beautiful thing about the soul that I'm learning is that it is not attached to outcomes. Ego gets very, very attached to outcomes in that it has a prescribed, that's the thing about ego, right? It's trying to control everything so that it can predict what's going to happen. I want to predict this. I'm going to control this. I'm going to make this, form it and shape it and make it happen the way I want it to happen. And so it gets really attached to outcomes. And so when those outcomes don't happen the way the ego wants it to, it gets really defensive. And it gets angry and it gets reactionary. Whereas the soul just looks at that and goes, you know what? I have very little control over this. I know what I want, but whether that happens or whether it doesn't happen, I am going to be okay with the outcome because I know that there's going to be something there that I can do something with, whether it was a good outcome or a bad outcome in that it was contrary to what I thought I wanted. Something can be learned from that. Something can be gained from that. And it's a huge thing to not be attached to outcomes, to not predicate your happiness on things going exactly as you plan them to go. Because how many times in life do things go exactly how we had them planned? It's rare. So our ability to still celebrate that experience, to still appreciate that experience, to still look at that and go, whew, that is not how I wanted that to go at all. But that's kind of how life is. It's like getting fired up about the weather, right? I can get really, really mad that I wasn't able to golf today because it rained. I can get really upset that I wasn't able to paint the fence today because the wind was blowing. Or I can just say, man, this weather is nuts, and just step back and appreciate it for what it is and not get attached to outcomes. Ego is very attached to outcomes. Soul is not attached to outcomes. And I've made some references to our men's group. We've been doing it every other week. and we meet on Sunday afternoons. If this is something that you would be interested in, it's a very non-threatening environment. The idea behind the men's group is to create a space for men to support men. I don't think that that is something that happens regularly. I know that I never turned towards men for emotional support ever in my entire life. I was raised by a single mom. I feel more comfortable turning towards women. Women are more emotionally mature. They're more emotionally in tune. They're more sensitive. And men don't turn to men because I think men see everything as a competition. Like, how am I going to be judged by these other men? I'm supposed to be competing for these guys for jobs and for status and for money and for potential partners. And if I show weakness to these men, you know, that's going to knock me down the totem pole. And what we want to do with these men groups is create a safe space, a confidential, safe space for men to support men. A lot of it ends up dealing with relationships. But it can deal with professional issues. It can deal with personal issues. And it's a very, hopefully, positive and supportive environment. And I'm hopeful that it will help in men for the most part. Not all the time. But we rely on women so heavily to be the emotional support in a relationship, be it romantic or not, that I don't really think it's fair. Men need to figure out how to support men in that process so that we're not putting all of our emotional baggage on women. They wear so many hats and they do such a good job of supporting other women that then trying to support men on top of that seems to be kind of an undue burden that I think men can do a better job of. So we're meeting on Sundays. We've been meeting at 4 o'clock. If that's something that you're interested in, please feel free to reach out to me. If you're interested in discussing this topic further, not necessarily in coaching, maybe not even necessarily coming to the men's group, I would be more than happy to have a conversation about it. Like I said, most of you that listen to this probably have my contact information, phone number, email addresses. I can be reached on Facebook. I can be reached on Instagram. I would love to have very deep, heartfelt conversations about this topic or any topic, really. So please feel free to reach out anytime. I really appreciate you all listening and giving me, I guess, an audience for this platform. I will try not to go as long in between my podcasts, but there are no guarantees. I appreciate you being here and listening to my ranting and raving. I hope you all have the motivation and desire to look inward for your own happiness and that you can operate from a place of heart and soul instead of ego. Take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you next time.